Coming up next, citing New York as a leader, Governor Andrew Cuomo calls on Congress to take immediate action on gun control. Our political observer, Alan Chartok, speaks with the governor about why the state controller hasn't gotten back his pre-audit powers despite an agreement. And a Capital Region congressman is trying again to pass anti-doping legislation in horse racing. Those stories and more next on the Legislative Gazette. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is calling on Congress to take immediate action on gun control in the wake of the El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio mass shootings. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Cuomo appeared on several television and radio shows, including on Albany Public Radio Station WAMC, where he said Democrats need to speak in one unified voice about the need to ban assault weapons, strengthen background checks, and take other steps to keep guns out of the hands of domestic terrorists.
And get the Democrats to sign on to one set of proposals so the public is not confused with this Chinese menu of options. Here's the Democratic bill. Senate, Congress, and the presidential nominees all on the same page.
U.S. Senator from New York and Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is calling for Congress to end summer recess and return immediately to Washington to act on gun control measures, including one to enact universal background checks. That was approved by the House earlier this year. President Trump, in his remarks to the nation Monday morning, condemned racism, bigotry, and white supremacy, and he said the nation stands unified against the shooting incidents. Cuomo calls the speech one of the great acts of hypocrisy, saying the president has made racism his stock in trade through his prior remarks and tweets. Trump supports the death penalty for those who commit mass murder, and he says the U.S. should enact what's known as a red flag warning measure. That permits a judge to order removal of a person's weapons if they're determined to present a danger to themselves or others. But Trump stopped short of advocating for a ban on assault-style weapons, saying mental illness and hatred pulls the trigger, not the gun. Cuomo takes issue with that.
The gun had the trigger. The gun is the trigger. Yes, hate is the problem, and mental illness is the problem. But the instrumentality of that hate is the gun. And it's both elements that have to be addressed.
Cuomo says that under his urging, the New York State legislature enacted strict gun control measures 6 years ago in the wake of the Sandy Hook, Connecticut school shooting. Assault-style weapons are illegal in New York. Cuomo says the laws have not hampered the rights of the state's gun owners and hunters.
No legal owner has been deprived of a gun. None of these fears that paralyzed the debate were realized. So the 6 years experience, New York shows what you can do. And again, it is a laboratory of democracy. And you can pass smart gun control laws that respect the rights of legal gun owners.
Earlier this year, lawmakers enacted a red flag law for New York. Last week, the governor signed into law a number of additional gun control measures, including imposing penalties against gun owners who live with children younger than 16 if they don't keep their weapons locked up. Another measure requires that a purchaser wait up to 30 days to buy a gun if there's something in their past that warrants a more thorough background check. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, this week you spoke with the state comptroller, Tom DiNapoli.
Of course, you had spoken with Governor Cuomo the day before that, who seemed not to know about why the powers of pre-audit that were agreed to be given back to the comptroller had not been yet. And when you said to the governor, and you were somewhat incredulous, the word has been used, about him not knowing about it, he said, well, despite that, you know, this process was too slow and we needed to move these contracts along, to which the comptroller said, that's not right. We move quickly.
He did. He said we move quickly. He's given assurances to the governor that they will move quickly. The fact that the governor doesn't want to give up basically this power that he has ripped from the comptroller, which is basically guaranteed in our state constitution, this is not a good idea. We have a comptroller. My point is we have a comptroller for a reason, to do the audits, to look at all of this, to make sure that it's all being done right. And we've seen some pretty powerful examples of how it wasn't done right.
Well, you talked to the comptroller about this pre-audit authority when he even suggested that some of your statements, he thanked you for asking the governor about it, for bringing it up as an important subject. And then following that discussion, you again spoke with Governor Cuomo about it, who said that he's now back in discussions with DiNapoli's folks to try to get this pre-audit authority back.
Well, we'll see. For some reason, this governor just can't give it up here. The Constitution gives us a comptroller. The comptroller has to do audits and pre-audits. We do know that two of Cuomo's associates are in jail. Why? Because they broke the law. And a pre-audit might have, not absolutely, but might have found what these guys were doing. It is incumbent that the comptroller be an independent force in New York and be allowed to do his job. I've been on the governor on this from day one, and I'm still not satisfied that he has done what he said he was going to do, which is he's going to give back those powers to the controller. For his part, the controller says the way that this has to work is change the law. You change the law to take my powers away from me. Now change the law to make sure I get them back.
Meanwhile, citing the SAFE Act and the recent gun control measures that were passed in the budget to strengthen gun control in New York, you questioned him about this ammo database. When asked about that delayed implementation, the ammunition database has been delayed for a while, and the governor is still defending.
Well, this is not a governor who is ever going to say, you know, there's more we could have done, or, you know, that there are parts of the SAFE Act which we haven't implemented. But clearly, by his rhetoric and his answers to me, he feels he's been really hurt by having proposed the SAFE Act, especially upstate, and the numbers do show it. David, let me just say I have a lot of admiration for the governor. I think the best thing he ever did was the SAFE Act. I think it proves, and he's saying it, and I think he's right, that he was ahead of everybody else on this. He knew what was coming. He's been prescient about it. He deserves great credit for it. But I also think he's a politician like all other politicians, and it's a matter of balancing things.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A new poll shows although his favorability and job performance ratings have sunk to record lows, a majority of New Yorkers believe Governor Cuomo has made New York a better place. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
Has third-term Democrat Andrew Cuomo made New York a better or worse place to live in the 9 years he's governed New York? Voters surveyed by the Siena College Research Institute say yes.
Well, a majority, 51%, say Cuomo has made New York a better place to live, compared to 39% who say he's made it a worse place to live. Not surprisingly, huge partisan gap. More than two-thirds of Democrats say he's made the state a better place to live. Nearly three-quarters of Republicans say he's made the state a worse place to live. Independents, more closely divided, although a plurality of them say he's made the state a worse place to live.
Siena's Steve Greenberg says when it comes to his favorability rating, the Democrat is at a nadir.
43% of voters view Andrew Cuomo favorably, 50% view him unfavorably. It matches his all-time low from February of this year. Similarly, his job performance rating is at the lowest point it has been. 34% say he's doing an excellent or good job as governor. 64% say he's doing only a fair or poor job as governor. And nearly a third, 32%, say he's doing a poor job. That's one-third of New Yorkers think he's doing a poor job as governor, and that's the highest number it's been since he's been governor.
When it comes to recently passed laws, Greenberg says voters give the governor high marks.
By an 84 to 14% margin, voters support the new law that requires parents to have their children vaccinated regardless of the parents' religious beliefs. And, of course, when you have a number like 84% support, it's across the board, 88% of Democrats, 80% of Republicans, 86% of independents. Similarly high, the new Farm Worker Bill of Rights. 78% of voters support that new law, only 15% oppose it. The law requiring that single-use plastic bags be banned has overwhelming support, 65 to 31%. Democrats, independents strongly support that new ban on plastic bags. Republicans, evenly divided. Voters also support the new banning of using the gay or trans panic defense. 58% of New Yorkers support that new law, 33% oppose.
There is one exception, the new green light law allowing undocumented immigrants to get a New York driver's license. Only 43% of New Yorkers support it, 53% oppose it. The poll also delves into public perception of two other high-ranking New Yorkers. President Donald Trump's favorability rating is up slightly, 35% favorable, 62% unfavorable. Trump's job performance rating is up to 34%. Greenberg says perhaps the president can find a little solace.
As bad as his favorability rating is, the mayor of New York City, a presidential contender, Bill de Blasio, has an even worse favorability rating. Right now in New York, 26% of voters view de Blasio favorably, 57 view him unfavorably. So Trump underwater by 27 points, de Blasio underwater by 31 points. And it gets worse for the New York City mayor. Among only Democrats in New York, de Blasio's favorability rating, 38 favorable, 49 unfavorable.
The poll of 810 state residents was conducted from July 28 through August 1st and has a margin of error of plus or minus 4.1%. There's more at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Well, August is here, and the thoroughbred racing season is in full swing across the state, including Saratoga Racecourse. And a New York congressman is trying once again to pass anti-doping legislation directed at the sport. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
Democrat Paul Tonko of New York's 20th Congressional District is a co-sponsor of the Horse Racing Integrity Act. Tonko and Republican Andy Barr of Kentucky are continuing their push for a bill intended to institute anti-doping rules and create uniformity across the country. At a press conference Thursday at the gates of Saratoga Racecourse, Tonko said owners, trainers, and jockeys have all called for a solution to the doping problem.
They have spoken out forcefully for a sensible, common-sense approach. I believe this does it.
Currently, 38 states host horse racing, and each state has its own set of regulations. The bill would create a panel to create and implement anti-doping rules across the horse racing industry. Also among its provisions, it would ban all use of medications within 24 hours of a race. Among the group flanking Tonko, Thoroughbred owner Art Hancock said the rule to restrict race day medication would make the U.S. racing industry like the rest of the world.
And you'd have the best testing facility in the country, which is USADA, United States Anti-Doping Agency, and they're in charge of the Olympics, and they can straighten this whole thing out. But we need Washington because of the 38 states, and we need to have an umbrella for that.
Much of the debate surrounding medication in horse racing centers around the drug commonly known as Lasix, a controversial anti-bleeding medication. Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito said the industry can be changed.
Do horses bleed? Of course they do. Is it going to take a long time? Yes. Yes, it's going to take a long, long time. But something has to be done.
The New York Racing Association, along with a coalition of other racetrack operators that together hold 86% of stakes races, this year announced its support for a phase-out of Lasix. Beginning next year, coalition tracks will no longer allow use within 24 hours before a race for two-year-olds. In 2021, the drug will be eliminated from use in stakes races. The uniformity that the Horse Racing Integrity Act would bring to all racetracks is backed by NYRA. Here's spokesman Pat McKenna.
Ultimately, uniformity is good for the longevity of the sport and, in turn, supports the continued success of the summer meet at Saratoga Racecourse, which is a major economic driver for the entire capital region.
To point out the need for new anti-doping rules, Stacy Hancock, Art's wife and a member of the Water Hay Oats Alliance, recited words by the late Mary Lou Whitney, originally written in 2013.
It takes a lifetime to build a reputation and only a second to lose it. We can no longer be absentee owners of our thoroughbreds. It's time to clean up our acts so our sport can, again, earn the respect of its fan. They deserve better, and so do our horses.
With a growing number of supporters for his legislation in the House, Congressman Tonko said he hoped the bill could be voted on within months.
And so I call upon both houses, and especially the majority leader of the United States Senate, to act accordingly. Provide for this common sense solution that will drive integrity into the equation, that will focus heavily and kindly on the equine athlete, and build support with the general community.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. In celebration of World Breastfeeding Week this week, St. Peter's Health Partners in Albany opened its newest baby cafe. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King was there.
Here we go. One, two, three.
The free drop-in center at 301 Washington Avenue is an affiliate of Baby Cafe USA and run by Albany's Baby Institute. Aaron Siniscalli, Director of Community Health Programs at St. Peter's, says the cafe was established with state grants to help expecting and new mothers learn more about breastfeeding and in turn combat childhood obesity.
Babies who are breastfed when they're infants, they actually have a lower rate of obesity all the way until adulthood. And one of the theories behind that is that breastfed babies, they eat until they're full. And we don't really know how much they ate, right, because they nurse. But they learn those cues of self-feeding and that when they're hungry, they eat. When they're fall, they stop.
Lactation specialists at Albany's Baby Cafe are available Tuesdays from 10 to noon. Specialist Stephanie Avianu says a lot of the job is weighing newborns and helping young moms navigate latching, but it's also about creating a space where mothers can trade advice. Avianu says motherhood can be isolating, and while the internet can provide a sense of community, it also comes with its fair share of myths and misinformation.
You know, we just kind of joke that it's a blur of, like,
boobs and wet diapers, but no, we say about 8 to 12 times a day is usually what we'd expect. So approximately every 2 hours, but not putting the baby on a schedule, watching those babies, that baby's feeding cues. You know, baby will often want a nurse multiple times in the course of an hour and then might sleep for a little bit.
Avianu says babies can continue breastfeeding up to age 2. The biggest myth? That mothers are supposed to grin and bear it.
Pain is a sign that something's wrong. So moms will come in and they'll be like, oh, sometimes it's their second baby. And with their first baby, they just say, oh, I just was in pain for 6 weeks and then it finally resolved itself, you know, and sometimes it doesn't.
While the Washington Avenue Cafe is the first in Albany County, it's part of a growing effort in the Capital Region. The CEO Community Center in Troy also hosts a baby cafe, as does the Phyllis Bourne Branch Library and Literacy Center in Schenectady. Avianu says additional sites are in the works in Schenectady and Cohoes, all in an effort to increase accessibility.
We're trying to reach moms that maybe don't have the resources or don't have transportation or reliable transportation so that they can come, you know, to a site that's close to where they live. So in Troy, you know, it's right in downtown and moms can come, you know, taking the bus or even walking. And so same thing here.
The second Schenectady Baby Cafe is expected to open at the Mount Pleasant Branch Library on August 29th. All of this comes on the heels of World Breastfeeding Week, a global initiative campaigning for paid parental leave and breastfeeding-friendly workspaces. For its part, Siniscalli says St. Peter's has used grant funding to establish lactation stations at Schenectady's Proctor's Theater and Colony Center. A mother herself, Siniscalli says she wishes she had a baby cafe when breastfeeding her children.
I had a really hard time learning how to breastfeed, and I remember calling the lactation consultants in the hospital, and they said, you can take the baby and you can drive to the hospital and see me when you're available and I'm available. But to have a place that at my leisure I can come and drop in and get the support, not just from the lactation consultants, but other moms. Plus, we have places for children to play in these centers. Everything's set up to be a really homey, living room type of environment.
Baby Cafe USA was established in 2011 and has 45 drop-in centers across 14 states. The organization says it supports more than 2,000 moms a year. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
Back in January, Westchester County implemented a new marijuana prosecution policy. The possession of 2 ounces or less of marijuana no longer results in a criminal conviction. On July 29, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed legislation further decriminalizing marijuana.
The state policy is more restrictive. We are not going to be prosecuting possessions of small amounts of marijuana for personal use at all. And if they are smoking it or burning it in public, we are treating it as a violation. At the state level, they have modified that so that the simple possession about 28 grams would be treated as a violation, which is non-criminal. But we are, more permissive in regards to it. We're not changing our policy.
To be clear, the difference is that the Westchester District Attorney's Office will not prosecute possession of less than 2 ounces of marijuana, while under state law, possession of less than an ounce will be treated as a violation, resulting in a fine on conviction, but not a criminal charge.
You know, our feelings were when we passed this created this policy, that it was important for us to take steps without waiting for the state legislature. We didn't know what their timetable was going to be. So we deviated from the existing law prior to their changes, and we're continuing to be more progressive in regards to that now. One thing that the state decriminalization has done, which we are very pleased that they handled, is involving the possible expungement of prior arrest records for these types of violations. Without state legislation to do it, there was is virtually a very complicated process to try to enable individuals to expunge those records. And by doing it statewide, it now makes the Office of Court Administration to be working very closely, you know, with other state agencies to notify individuals and allow an expungement equally throughout the state. Without their expungement regulations that have changed, the DA would have to go to individual courts and make an application for an expungement, and individual judges could have different opinions. Now, that will not be the case. So we are pleased with the decriminalization actions that occurred at the state level dealing with the expungement.
Scarpino, a Democrat first elected in 2016, says his office prosecutes about 30,000 criminal cases annually, including ones that are drug-related. He believes county policy has had a positive effect.
Well, I think we've seen some reduction in that regard. You know, since we're not prosecuting them, I know initially there were some law enforcement agencies that continued to make the arrests, but it's in full swing here. So there is a drop based upon the policy that we've had. But I would suggest to you that there were a certain amount of cases, but it isn't making a wide path in regards to the number of cases that we prosecute. We still prosecute 30,000 cases a year.
And what is your hope as more time goes by?
Well, my hope, as time goes by, is that, the whole goal of the decriminalization is the feeling that the impact that was occurring to certain communities, the collateral damage that was happening to these individuals that were being arrested for B misdemeanor types charges for possession of small amounts of marijuana, was preventing them from being able to go to college, get student loans, get public housing, and become a barber, get a license. And so that impact now is going to be reduced. Whether it's under my policy or the state policy, it will be non-criminal. Under the state policy, even though they may authorize the prosecution, it would be prosecution as a violation, which is non-criminal. So I think it's going to have a good impact on the communities in which it has been had the greatest impact.
Cuomo said state law had disproportionately affected African-American and Latino communities. Meantime, state lawmakers did not support the legalization of adult-use recreational marijuana during the session that ended in June, but plan to return with attention to the topic next year. Scarpino believes it was wise to hold off on such legislation.
Well, I think it was a wise decision not to legalize it at this point in time, because there has to be a lot more discussion going on. This is a much more complicated issue than certain folks are trying to push. There are issues that deal with mental health, law enforcement, zoning, community reactions, the opting out of certain counties within the state, even if they pass legislation as to whether they would authorize the sale of it in their counties. It is very complicated. On a law enforcement end, I have very serious concerns on how you are how we could prosecute individuals that are driving under the influence of marijuana. It's almost impossible for us to prosecute them now. Some sort of steps have to be taken to make sure that the roads are safe. We can do it when it's alcohol, but with marijuana, we don't have the technical capability of addressing that issue. But it's very complicated, the marijuana sales and how it's going to play out. We think it's best for the legislature to have a big, long debate on this and address it and hear from the different counties and the different communities.
Anthony Scarpino is Westchester County District Attorney. The state decriminalization law goes into effect August 28th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1932. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.